I'm the other Adam who's supposed to have the preacher tie on. So that's how you can recognize which Adam I am. I learned a new phrase this week. It's called social capital. I didn't know what this phrase was, but let me read to you the definition so that you can be even more confused. Social capital is the network of relationships among people who live and work in a particular society, enabling that society to function effectively. Well, all right. Aren't we all a little bit farther down the road? Basically, social capital is this. Social capital has to do with the relationships that everybody in here forms. So you form a relationship. It has to do with the circles that you run in, the kind of circles that you want to run in. It has to do with the value of those circles, the return of an investment that you get out of those circles. So that's why it's called capital, because you know, you can spend it. You gain all of these things. But here's the thing about social capital. You don't want to spend it. You want to invest it. So let me kind of give you a little, this is how this works, okay? So when it comes to social capital, you want to pick the right people to form contacts with. In some of your age, they used to call it the Rolodex. My generation, we have no clue what that is. It's called a cell phone, and we look in it to see what the numbers are. But there are certain people, certain contacts that you want to have that are really important people. Like if they call, you want to answer the phone, or if you can get them to owe you a favor, that would be even better. So social capital is about becoming more accepted in better groups, okay? So the more accepted you are, the more your thing doesn't work, the more popular you become. And the more popular you become, the more friends you make. And the more friends you make, the more social capital you have. Now, do we all understand what this is? Yeah, social capital. So it's all about kind of gaining a bigger spot. Now, this happens in all forms of life at all ages. So if you're 14 years old, don't feel like this sermon has nothing to do with me. If you're 8 years old, I don't know why you're still in here, but probably, you know, if you're not, even if you're eight, it has to do with you. It has to do with every person, no matter who you are, where you work, what you do, at all. So I wrote a Christmas book this year, and in trying to get it published, I would talk to these publishers, and every publisher told me, you're going to have a big social capital. What does that mean? Well, when you talk about social capital among, you know, if you're trying to get something published or something else, so they want you to have this platform, this social platform that you're on the internet, and you got to have a big Facebook following, and you got to be on Instagram, and you got to be on Twitter, and you got to be on, I forgot the other stuff. What's the other stuff? What are y'all on? What's the thing? No, Snapchat. No, LinkedIn, that's for old people, Sarah. Snapchat. Snapchat. That's what the younger crowd's doing, okay? No. If you're on LinkedIn, it doesn't mean you're old. It just means you're older than Rachel and Izzy and Brooks and Luke and, you know, the rest of them. Are y'all on LinkedIn? Amber, are you on LinkedIn? No. Is there a 20-year-old in here on LinkedIn? One. Two. Three. Is it working? Is LinkedIn working for you? See, no, that's why we're not on it. See, so it has to do with the kind of platform that you have. And but I'm glad, you know, I'm glad we brought this up, because the ladies in the back, they're saying, oh, LinkedIn doesn't work for me. If they want to increase their social capital, getting on LinkedIn is a bad idea. You wasted your investment, right? You know, getting on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, that probably was good for the investment. Now, if you're 70 or 80, I'm not sure. Not sure Snapchat's going to help you. I guess it can help you. There was somebody who was close to 80, and he got on Snapchat, and he was asking. He said, "How do I work this Slapshot?" I don't know what that means. But it has to do with the kind of platform you're on. And when I was trying to get this book published, they said, "Look, if we're going to publish your book, we need you to go ahead and sell 1,500 copies before it's ever published." So how do I do that? So you need at least 1,500 to 2,000 followers on your platform. And when you get that many followers, then when you put out a book, you know, boom, you already got 1,000. So I said, so you want me to do your job for you? And they said, well, technically, yes, because that's what your competition's doing. And so it's all about what you can accrue. It's all about what you can get. It's all about followers. And please, if you think, well, that's why I didn't publish books, let's come on now. I've seen social media. all the things we post hearts to and likes and the things we share. And if you think we don't judge you for what you share, think again. You know, how many times have you looked at something on Facebook and you thought, well, I can't believe they like that. Or, you know, I can't believe they shared that. I guess they didn't see the word at the bottom of that. You know, they go to church and they share. You know, I teach my kids, pay attention to what you share. Pay attention to what you post. I will tell adults as I tell children, posting is permanent. Posting is permanent. Whatever you post, it's like a tattoo. When you're 89, you're going to look at it and you probably will think, what was I thinking when I got that? Now, maybe not. Some of us have tattoos. We're still proud of them. That's okay. But on Facebook, it's still around. You get to be 118 years old, it's still there. Somebody would dig that up. Posting is permanent. So we teach our children what you post, you got to be careful about that. I don't know if y'all have noticed this, but I don't really pay attention. Obviously, I didn't do what the publishers, most of them wanted me to do. You know, I didn't pay attention to my social media platform. Some of y'all tell me stuff all the time. Did you see this? Did you see this? I have no clue what you... I just found out Romaine was recalled. I'm serious. I just found out. And we went to Publix, and we were getting some pasta, and I said, man, I'd love a Caesar salad. And Kim said, good luck. And how many of you didn't know that Romaine was recalled? Me and Brother Cal. All right, yeah. I didn't know. Obviously, he didn't check his social media platform either. He didn't check his Facebook. It wasn't on his social capital. You know, so he didn't know. We were in Publix. I said, I'm just going to go over here and get it. She said, good luck. You go over there and see if you can find it. I went over there. It's gone. It wasn't just romaine. Like all the lettuce. It's all gone. I looked at the Publix attendant. I don't know if they're called attendants, like they're at a gas station. At the Publix attendant, I said, hey, where's the romaine? And she cocked her head at me like my dog used to do, you know. And she said, the romaine is gone. And I said, why would you not restock it? No, I don't know. Kim didn't tell me. She just said, it's gone. And she said, it's been recalled. I said, really? And she said, yes. I said, from where? You know, from Lebanon. Come on now. She said, no, it's for the whole country. I said, really? Really? That's my, you know, if I don't believe you, that's what I said. Really? And I looked, and there it is, you know, November 20th, you know, nationwide recall. And I thought, get out of here. And I logged on Facebook. No, I'm 10 days behind. I'm 11 days behind. So obviously, I don't keep up as much as I should. But I will say that when it comes to social capital, the reason I don't like a bunch of stuff on Facebook is because I don't want you guys to see what I like. I'm being honest with you. You know, and every time I recommend a movie, y'all notice what I say about the movie? It's horrible. Don't watch it. And the only reason I say that is because I can't remember if there are any swear words. If I said I liked it and then you go watch it and there was a word and I get blamed. You see how this works out for me? I didn't do well for my social capital. It's important, the capital you invest in people. And I'm being serious. Your social circles matter. We've all grown up with this. This is nowhere more prevalent than in our teenagers. I mean, you want to watch how this works. Go in a middle school or a high school lunchroom. Serious. Go into a high school or a middle school or an elementary school. Go to public school or private school. Social capital. You want to be careful who you invest your social capital in. Because if you spend this capital in the wrong spot, you're ruined. You're ruined. You don't believe me? Ask any kid who goes to high school or middle school. Ask the teachers in here. Ask those of you who used to be school administrators. They will tell you. We learn this at age 7. It matters who you eat with, and don't be caught eating alone. And if you are eating alone, you're not someone I want to eat with because you don't raise my capital. Isn't the world a mean, mean place? And we thought adults were mean. We got it early. We got it in school. This has been around for forever, and we're still doing it. Even though the phrase wasn't there 2,000 years ago, the concept was. If you have your Bibles, I want to relook at that text that Brother Luke read this morning. Luke chapter 7. Luke didn't write it, but it kind of bears his name. So Luke 7, One day I hope Luke gets up here and says, I'm going to read my book, you know, chapter 7. I want to read Luke chapter 7. I want to read it out of the NIV. If you get a chance, read it out of the New Living Translation. It's a better translation of the story, but I want to read 36 through 39. And we're going to stay right here. I know I say that every time, but we really are. We're just going to stay right here. I want you to notice the mistake Jesus makes. Luke 7, verse 36. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him. By the way, this Pharisee has a lot of social capital. And so he went to the Pharisee's house and he reclined at the table, verse 37. But then a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. And so she brought an alabaster jar of perfume. And as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. And then she wiped them with her hair. And she kissed them and she poured perfume on them. Now, I want you to notice verse 39. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, you know, if this guy were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is. She is a sinner. Did you catch it? Jesus obviously doesn't pay attention to his social capital. You know, if he was a man who had been taught to pay attention to the people he associates with, then he would know that you're making a bad investment. When you touch this woman, when you invite this woman to sit with you, when you have a dialogue with this woman, it's a bad investment. You know, and everybody's following, everybody wants to be you, I invite you to my house, and then you go and blow your capital on this. It's like when your kid, you know, bought a used Jeep, you know, with 280,000 miles and two replaced engines. They said, Dad, I made a good investment. No, you really threw your money away, son. You got hosed at the used car lot. They're looking at Jesus this way. And she came in, she has some tears, she brought in an expensive jar, and then you went and bought it hook, line, and sinker. You know, you hit the like button. You followed. You shared it. Ugh. If this guy would have known, you know, he's just not experienced. He's probably from, I don't know, probably from Lebanon. You know, or you know, from Galilee. You know, that off in the sticks, right? He doesn't know the rules. And if he would have known the rules, he wouldn't have touched the woman. He wouldn't have had anything to do with the woman. But let me ask you this. Did Jesus know the rules? He knew them well. That's right. He knew them well. And here's why I think they're really mad. I'm just speculating here because the text doesn't tell me, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. I think they're mad because Jesus didn't care about the rules, and he was more popular than they were. Yeah, I mean, you know why they invited him? Because everybody's following Jesus. By the way, let me just stop here for those of you who are still young enough to try to follow everything. If you ever ask yourself, what would Jesus do? Let me give you a short answer. Jesus follows no one. It's the other way around. Everybody follows Jesus. Jesus follows no one. Jesus follows himself. And your option is to follow him. So here he is at the table, and this woman chooses to follow, and he spends his capital, and they're going to love him for it. But here's the thing about Jesus that I want us to focus on this morning. Jesus does three things that are backwards from our society and society 2,000 years ago. And if we could do these three things, I'm going to give you a guarantee. You will not be successful on this earth, like at all. Like maybe temporarily, yes. Because remember, Jesus has a lot of followers. But in a few chapters, in fact, the chapter that Brother Don read at the Lord's Supper, how many followers does Jesus have left in the end? A goose egg. Zero. Even his first 12 followers, you know, the ones who were like liking everything, went down to 11 and then 10. Then he's left with 2. Then he's got none. So Jesus is going to spend this capital like a 15-year-old spends allowance. Okay? Like some of you still spend your paycheck. He's going to spend this capital. Okay? So let me give you a little disclaimer. If you follow this, I'm not saying you're going to be broke. What I'm saying is I'm not sure in the end, you will be considered to be a success in this world. But there's something Jesus knows that they didn't. And I want to share them with you. Here's the first. Jesus knows the difference between worth and value. Went and saw the play Mary Poppins last night. I would recommend it to everybody because there's no foul language in it, okay? So by all means, go see Mary. Now, it's 3 hours, so get a nap before you go. It's 3 hours long. It's 29 songs, you know, in the thing. And people like me, I'm looking at the program like 27 to go, 26 to go. 20, I'm using my watch as a light. 23, 22. I look over and Brooke's doing the same thing. 18, 17. You know, I mean, we enjoyed it. I mean, don't get me wrong. We enjoyed it. It's just 3 hours of a lot of singing. You know, but in any case, in part of the show, because I don't think I ever saw the movie when I was a kid, but in part of the show, one of the boy characters, he's going up to someone else, and they said, you need to know the value of money. I'm going to teach you about the value of money. And the boy says, well, I know all about the value of money. And he pulls out, you know, some coins out of his pocket. And he says, you see this coin? This is a sixpence. It's in London. I don't know what a sixpence is, but you follow. He says, I know this is a sixpence. And the guy had a really cool line. The guy said, no, that's what it's worth. The value is in what you can buy with it. And I thought, that is a very distinct distinction. The worth of money is how much it's worth. The value of money is in what you can do with it. Jesus knew the difference between worth and value. You know, when I look at someone, I think, how much is that person worth? I don't mean I look at you that way, like, you know, how much, you know. But do we? Don't we estimate everybody's worth when we see them? How much do they raise my capital? How far can they get me? How much can they help me? You're worth only what you do for me. That's how society looks at people. Jesus looked at you and didn't see worth. Jesus looked at you and valued you. Jesus never estimated your worth. Jesus valued you and made you worth something. That's a very distinct distinction. This woman comes in, she cries on his feet, and everybody says, this woman's worth nothing. She's got nothing to offer. She brought in an alabaster jar with an expensive perfume, and what did she do with it? Y'all have known the story longer than I have. What did she do with it? She blew it. She blew it. Remember in the other Gospels, who's the angriest about this? Judas, yes. Oh, here we go. Oh, because he's got to run the treasury. And y'all know church treasuries. You know, it's barely, you know, black, red. You know, it's right on the line. And, you know, here we are. We're barely, you know, we're barely living check to check. This woman brings in, we got a good investment. She wastes it. It's a waste. It was worth so much. And Jesus, in all, you know, look in Luke, look in Matthew, look in Mark. And in all three Gospels, Jesus looks at them and he scolds them. You see worth. Look at the value. Look at this woman. Jesus valued her not for how much worth she could make him, but he valued her because he thought she was worth something. And here's the second thing he did. So Jesus knows the difference between worth and value. Jesus makes others feel valuable. Instead of gaining social capital, Jesus gave his away. And that's a big no-no. Don't blow it. Don't waste it. Especially don't waste it on that. Look at the last part of this story, because Jesus kind of drives this point home. Look at verse 40, because the guy he's eating with is a little upset. Jesus blew it. You know, we had all this great capital, and now Jesus is blowing it. In verse 40, Jesus says, Simon, I have something to tell you. If Jesus ever says that to you, run. It's like my dad used to say, you know, hey, let's talk a minute. Oh, here we go. You know, I didn't do it. My brother did it. I didn't do it. Simon, I got something to tell you. And Simon foolishly says, tell me, teacher, as if, you know, sure. Verse 41, Jesus says, two people owed money to, let's say, a money lender. One of them owes 500 denarii. So let's say one of them owes, like, I don't know, $50 million. Okay, you have $50 million. You have $1 million in school debt. I don't know why the government foolishly lent you that, but they did. You owe $1 million in school debt, And then we have somebody else who owes 50 bucks in school loans. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. And so the government decided they're going to pay the debts of both. You know, new president says all school loans are out. I guarantee you I am the happiest person in here. I guarantee. I know we got some nursing students in here. Well, I'm a theology major, so yeah, never going to pay mine back. So I got you beat. Forgave the debts of both, and he asked Simon, he said, which one of them do you think will love him more? And Simon says, well, I suppose the guy who got the bigger debt forgiven. And Jesus says, you are exactly right. And at this point, I'm thinking, huh? Verse 44, he turns to the woman and he said to Simon, he said, you see this woman? You know, I came to your house. You didn't give me any water for my feet. She wet my feet with tears. She wipes them with her hair. You don't give me a kiss. This woman, from the time I got here, has not stopped kissing my feet. You didn't put oil on my head. She has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, let me tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. This woman did not hoard, save, or invest any of her capital. What did she do with it? She blew it. Everything she had, she spent. You remember the widow's mite story Jesus will tell? Is this not the same story? They didn't hoard it. They didn't keep it. He spent it. When it comes to social capital, Jesus says, don't save it. Don't hoard it. Blow it. Blow it. It's what the woman did. It's exactly what the woman did. And here's the last one, because it has to do with that last line that Jesus tells Simon. Jesus says, whoever has been forgiven little loves little. This morning, those of you who don't need anything, those of you who are pretty well invested in your, I guess, your social circles, you may have a lot when it comes to that capital, but I will promise you, you don't have a lot when it comes to forgiveness. Forgiveness comes to those who need it. Forgiveness comes to those who don't feel as if they have anything to offer. And if you have a lot of capital to spend, then you have your reward. You've gained it all. Jesus did not invest in this earth. Jesus invested in the kingdom of God. And if you're going to invest in the kingdom of God, you don't get to take anything with you. So everything you are investing in here to keep with you, you will lose at death. And so if you die and you've only invested here, you will go to heaven with nothing. Now you may think, isn't that the point? But let me stretch this a little further. If you have not invested in the kingdom of God, there is no forgiveness. Forgiveness comes to those who invest in it. The kingdom is for those who invest in it. And so although you will die here with nothing, you will have nothing to gain in the next life. Or let me say it like Jesus does. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where thieves break in and steal. In other words, you can lose it any minute. You remember this election? Of course you do. In 2016? And I'm not going to say the names. Well, I will. But at some point, then candidate Trump, the wrong person said, I support Trump. He came out and said, I support Trump. And it was not a good endorsement for him. Now, there were some bad ones, but this one was really bad. And I know probably most of y'all remember the name of the guy. I don't want to say his name because I don't like the guy. But he came out and said, yeah, he's my candidate. And I remember the commentator saying, this is not a good investment for Donald Trump. What they're saying is, you don't want this guy's investment. You don't want him in your circles because it's a bad move. And they knew if you invest over here, you'll kill your chances. Now, he did and it didn't, so, you know, that's neither here nor there. But it kind of goes to show that every person we talk to, every relationship we try to build, any kind of conversation we have, you risk losing your capital. But I want to tell you this morning, blow it all. Blow it on those that you would not normally spend it on. 2 years ago, players from Florida State were visiting students at Monford Middle School. Travis Rudolph, he's a wide receiver at Florida State, went into the lunchroom because he was hungry, and he's a college football player. They don't get paid. But he wanted some pizza. So he went into the college lunchroom, and they gave Travis Rudolph some free pizza. And he looked around the room, and he saw this table with this little kid named Bo Paskey. Bo Paskey is on the spectrum. He has autism. And Travis just went and sat with him, started talking. And somebody snapped the picture and sent it to the mom, and the mom just cried and cried. Said, "My son sits alone every day at lunch." So Travis decided, well, you need a jersey, man. You need to come to Florida State game. You need to sit on the sidelines with us. And the very next game, you know, Florida State's down, and they're down by a touchdown. This was like 2 years ago when they could actually win a game. And it's towards the end of the half, and Florida State's down, and they just kind of throw a Hail Mary, and who comes down with it? Travis. And where does he take it to? Bo Paskey. Here you go, man. Who do you think's the most popular kid at school now? You know, Bo Paskey. Who do you think doesn't eat lunch alone anymore? Bo Paskey. And you know, and this picture went viral like immediately, and rightfully so. And I don't want to take away from Travis Rudolph. I don't, because what he did was a great thing. But do y'all know why things go viral? Because they're amazing. Do you know why this was amazing? Because we don't sit with kids like this. It'd be great if it wasn't so sad. When pictures like this go viral, I think what it should do to the church is not make us happy, it should make us ashamed. The reason it goes viral is because we do this. And if you think we don't do this as adults, please think again. Don't do that. Don't. You're lying to yourself if you really believe that. I said at the start, this is a message for all ages. And it applies across the board. When I was a teenager, I used to hear arguments for or against Christian schools, you know, whether they're Church of Christ Christian schools or denominational Christian schools or whatever Christian schools. And I would hear arguments that this Christian school is not really a Christian school because they didn't teach the right doctrine, or they didn't teach the, this is not a Christian school because they had, I don't know, instruments during chapel, or this is not a good Christian school because I don't know, because they're Catholic. I don't know. But there's every argument under the sun of why this school's not good for your kids, and this school's not good for your kids. And yes, I'm picking on Christian schools, but I'll tell you why in a minute. And recently I heard someone talking about Christian schools, and he said, this guy was talking about all Christian schools here in the Middle Tennessee area, and he said, it is time that we show these parents and our community that we are a Christian school, not by our doctrine, but by how much we can serve the community. And I think he's wrong too. Yeah. I grow tired of Christian schools who advertise their prayer service or their day of prayer or how much time they spend giving or the programs they have or their mission trips. I get tired of all people putting their acts of righteousness on display for us to get more likes and more tuition. Let me tell you something. If you want to enroll your child or your grandchild in a school for great academics, then look at their average ACT score. If the school can help your kid get an average 29 or 30, and you're in it for the academics, send them to that school. That is the best academic choice for your child. But let me tell you something. If you are looking for a school to send your child or your grandchild for a Christian education, look in the lunchroom. Forget the speeches. Don't watch the PowerPoint presentations. Don't go through the whole thing. I'll save you an hour's time. Don't do the open house. Don't do any of that stuff. Go to the lunchroom. Look in the lunchroom. Are there kids sitting at tables by themselves? Have those students been taught about kingdom capital? You'll find the school. That's what we teach. You may think, oh, that's kind of harsh. There are people who look for the perfect church. You want to find the perfect church? It's not in the church you can do the. I see churches, they, you know, look at how many boxes we packed. Look at how many people we send. And I get it. Like, we're happy about it. You know, and today we had a day of prayer. I get it. We want people to know, but I'm not so sure the acts of righteousness are supposed to be put on display to get likes and shares and thumbs up. I think what we're supposed to be doing is just investing our capital. Paul and Peter talked a lot about faith, but let me read to you the words of James. Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed, we'll pray for you," but does nothing about their physical needs, so what? What good is that? In the same way, faith by itself, if not accompanied by action, is dead faith. This morning, the invitation is for teenagers, parents, grandparents, single, married, young, experienced. I want everyone in this room, when you leave here, to find someone to spend your capital on. And it needs to be one of these four people. Someone who is out of place, new, unsure of themselves, or alone. Those are the only four you get. Let me read to you one more time. They got to be out of place, new, unsure of themselves, or alone. Because you know what? Any of those four people offer you squat. You won't get nothing out of investing in that. You're going to waste your capital. But I will tell you what you get. You have invested in the kingdom of God. You will have lost every cent of your earthly capital, but you will have gained the kingdom. I want you to find that person. I want you to invite them to sit with you. I want you to talk with them. I want you to eat with them. I don't want us to be concerned about raising our own capital. I want us to be concerned about spending it and raising the capital of others. That's what Jesus wanted to do. Go broke. Remember when Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, blessed are the merciful, blessed are those who mourn all the time." And I used to hear that and think, man, Jesus is really a downer. Jeez. But I think I'm finally realizing what he meant. Blessed are those who have just blown every dime of their earthly investment. Because you know who the richest people in the world are? Those who have invested their entire life in the kingdom. This morning, stop asking, "Who's my neighbor?" Start being neighborly. Let's think about how we can do it and who we can do it to as we stand and sing.